Welcome back, everybody. Happy Thursday. Really quick announcement for a few of you that have texted me already. The website is having some problems. The ISP is having an issue. Sorry about that. We did email you directly yesterday the link or the details for the workbook. So if you're struggling getting on the site, look at your email. It came yesterday. The subject of that email is tomorrow is for you, ...... 11 a.m. So if you don't have the handout, if you don't have it, check your email. It's there. And we are currently moving the site to another ISP because this one's been problematic after lots and lots and lots of years. The last month has been lots of problems, so we're moving. So sorry about the delay. And if you don't have it, then check your email. We emailed it to you yesterday. So announcements aside, welcome back. This is the truth about sales. This is week number two. And our focus today is we're going to dig in a little bit to what I like to call customer-centric sales, right? So the sale is all about the customer. And I think there's so many people that get this backwards. The salesperson thinks it's about them. Hey, let me tell you how great I am and how many things I've sold, and let me show you my, right? And the salesperson is making the sale all about them, which for a million reasons is a low success rate. We're taking on today a whole new perspective that what happens when we make the sale 100% about the client, client-centric. So several very powerful tools today that are going to make that easy and smooth and powerful. So last week, we did some admin. We did some setup. It was our launch. We spoke about getting into rapport. We're going to do a great rapport exercise today. We spoke last week about how do people listen. And then we also set up a self-critique exercise called the 360 review. We're going to talk about that here in just a moment. Since we know that all decisions are value judgments, this week we're going to delve in a little bit to values and our own values and our own value judgments and how do we make those judgments and where do we get those values. And hopefully we're going to start a query that's going to have us questioning our defaults, right? Where did we get those defaults? So, and then we're going to go do an exercise where we elicit the client's values. You will learn. This is insanely powerful. And answers aside, just the process of going through the exercise will generate ahas for the client and will bond your client to you. So that's what's coming. All right. Before I keep blabbing on getting into a bunch of new stuff, let's do a little share. Last week, because it's our setup call, I did most of the talking. I'd like to start off this call this week right now by hearing what you got out of doing the 360 review. So if you did a few of those, if you got some feedback, if you learned some insights, what did you learn? So star 6 on your phone will unmute you and pull you into the queue. Remember, when you do that, please say your name and where you're from, and hopefully everybody will get to know you, and we'll start sending you, you know, referrals back and forth. So,
hey, Joel, that link is dead, by the way. The link to the thing from your email, you can't download
it. The link
in
the email is dead.
Yeah.
The link in the email is dead. Damn. All right, let me send a quick text to my marketing guru and let him know that. He's hustling, trying to put out fires this morning. Our ISP has been so problematic, we're moving it. So thanks for the heads up. I'll see if we can get that fixed here. This happened in a group yesterday, and it took them about 10 minutes. We got it fixed. So, okay, thanks. See if I can fix that right now. Anybody else? Did you do this? How many 360 reviews did you do? And what did you get from that experience?
Hey, yeah, Paul, this is Maura. Oh, sorry.
Well, hang on a second. I heard two people. The first name I heard was Maura, and then the gentleman with the really deep voice, you can be next. Maura, go first, please.
Hey, so I did 8 of them, and I was pleasantly surprised. I just was excited because they were all very similar, and the things that were real similar about it were things I didn't really realize that I do. For example, being overly sensitive when I don't hear what I want to hear, and it comes across in just my entire being. Even if I try to hide it, it's something that comes across real easily. Everybody said that.
And you didn't
know
that.
Well, I knew how I felt, but I guess I didn't realize how it comes across, that it's very easy to see it, that that's one of the first things that people are like, oh, well, she's upset or she was disappointed with what I had said. So that was something that stuck out to me. But also something I really was proud of to hear is that there really wasn't anything that people felt like they couldn't depend on me for, that I am always there no matter what anybody needs, and that I would be one of the first people that they would reach out to if they needed something. And so I feel like, you know, that's a huge part of building rapport. I mean, that's exactly what it is.
And trust.
So, and trust, exactly. And
trust,
I did it with different people. I did with family and friends, and I also reached out to some people that may not feel as close to me, I guess I could say, as my family and close friends. And so it was interesting to hear that feedback, even from people who I wouldn't necessarily say we have a great relationship or more of a professional relationship versus a friendship. So those were a couple things that I got out of it.
Bravo. Bravo. And I love it that you did it with several different people, family, friends, like people closer, people not so close. And I think it's a great sign that what you heard was pretty consistent. For me, that tells me that you're being authentic in your life. You're not being different for different people. You're just you, no matter who your audience is. That's a really good sign.
Well, thank you. Yeah, this is a really awesome thing. I look forward to doing more of them.
Yeah, it's a great exercise. One other thing that I wanted to say about that was, did everybody else catch that she said, Mara said, well, I knew how I felt, and I knew how I took things, yet I didn't realize that everybody else got it so clearly. Yet everybody said the same thing, like, oh, yeah, she's upset, it's clear. So consider that this is mostly true for all of us, and just consider that it's impossible. I don't know if this is true. This is the way I like to play. Consider that it's impossible for you to hide what's going on for you. So, for example, if you're sitting down with a client and you think, oh, God, this guy's an idiot. Oh, my God, this guy's an idiot. You can't hide that. They're going to pick up on it somehow. Right? So I always want to think the best of people because, you know, if I'm upset and I'm trying to hide it, I'm in some place that's not being authentic. That's not being transparent. And do your best to hide it, and you can't. You can't hide it. So thank you so much for sharing that. That was brilliant. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Hey, who is the gentleman with the big, deep voice that was next in line?
Paul Conte in Roseville, California.
Oh, hey,
California.
Paul.
Hey, how you doing?
Great.
Well, I don't know. It was something that came back, and I probably knew this all the time, but I didn't know what I was doing that was doing this too often. I do a lot of networking. I get involved with the chamber meetings.
Yep.
As that, and one of the things I was told, and this was several of my friends, so it was really it really shined, is I joke around too much. He says there's a part of being funny and there's a part of being a clown, and he says you seem to go over the edge just a little bit more and more frequently, and I'm going like, yeah, and I guess that's why people wouldn't look at me as a professional because I tend to be I want to get attention, of course, but I'm witty and I'm funny, and I'll never forget many, many years ago, I was working with a buyer, and the lady said, gee, if I don't buy a house from you, you're the funniest guy I ever met. I'm going, holy moly, I better shut my mouth and start being a salesman, you know. So Now I've
so
I know
here's
what
another.
I,
hang on, let me make a comment really quick. So everybody else, check this out. Hang on, Paul. I'm going to talk about you for a moment. So everybody else, check this out. Paul knew that he had a good sense of humor, and he enjoyed being funny, and had no idea that it was showing up for his clients and prospects in a way that was hampering his business. Right? He had no idea. He just thought, oh, I'm a funny guy. I'm sharp. I'm funny. I like to play with people. I like to have a good time. And this is a perfect example that this has been going on all along. It's been costing him business, and he didn't know. Great, Paul.
Right.
Great.
Right. Yep.
Okay, what else were you going to say?
Oh, well, that's it. So good thing I got rid of that clown suit a long time ago, which I did have.
So, Paul,
anyway,
one thing for you to consider, too, and I think this is something to look into for people that have this kind of engagement with comedy and humor, is what was the intention of your humor? Were you saying it to be funny? Were you saying it as a tool to bond with people? Or were you using comedy as a way to get attention? Were you using it as a way to look funny and smart? So just something, I don't know what the answer is.
No.
I think it was
the attention, you know, getting a little bit more heavier exposed. I mean, just it's the attention, being the center of attention. I've always been a class clown, and I was a member of Toastmasters many years ago, and when it got to saying a serious speech, I couldn't give a serious speech, so I finally quit.
Yeah.
And so that's my, I have to sort of sit on myself and watch what I'm doing, because I tend to, and every time I'll stand up to introduce myself in a group of 50 or 60 people at a meeting, you know, they're expecting me to say something funny, so I'm going to have to shut that down, okay? And,
well, so there's two, so I want to say one last thing about this while we still have Paul here. That makes me think of two things. One, you have to be intelligent to be funny. There's no such thing as an idiot comedian. If you have the ability to be funny all the time, in my opinion, that's a sign of intelligence. The thing to consider, though, is sales. It's our topic today. In order to be legendary in the sales community, you have to make it all about the customer. And if you keep drawing the attention back to you, whether it's comedy or some other tool, if you keep making it about you, making it about you, making it about you, you're not making it about the customer, and at some point, they're clear that you're not looking out for their best interest.
Right.
Right. We're gonna dive deep, deep, deep into that in a few weeks when we do objection handling. Paul, thank
Got
you
it.
For sharing that, man. Great.
Sure.
Great,
Joel,
great.
Sam from California.
Yes. Hello.
How are you?
And
hi.
Sam. I'm doing great. Thanks.
Valencia. I did several 360s, and the one that it was all enlightening and super helpful, but the one question that really I tilted my head was the answers to, is there anybody to whom you feel I owe an apology? And that was really interesting to hear their perspective and the context in which I interacted with each of those people, to hear how unwittingly I had conveyed something of tension or dissatisfaction or offense about someone else in my life. And that was revealing for me. That was really helpful. I mean, I'm not a gossip, and I don't walk around saying horrible things, but even so, kind of like Maura said, she felt it but didn't know everybody else felt it. It was similar to that.
Yeah.
Like, wow. Okay.
Well, isn't that mostly perspective? So most of the time when somebody says, yeah, you owe an apology to that person, most of the time it's a perspective. So you didn't do anything on purpose.
Right.
Right. I don't think that people, most people, unless you're a sociopath, most people don't hurt others on purpose. But that's not the point.
Well,
the point is, go ahead.
Well, one of the things that I got from it was that the three people that had an answer for that one gave me one or two names. And I obeyed the instructions, which were not to give any feedback and just say, great, can you think of anything else? And what was cool was every person that they named
if I had had a conflict with that person, it actually was already resolved with that person, but
great.
The interviewer or interviewee didn't know that, right? So you're right, their perspective, but it's really where I left off with them that
That's right.
they had no idea that I went back and solved the problem somewhere else. It just showed me like, oh, it's really important to either close loops or don't start them at all.
No. That's right. And to, you know, clean up the stuff that you leave in your wake. Right.
Right.
So one of my perspectives on communication is the only meaning, the true meaning of your communication is only measured by the response that you get,
right.
regardless of your intention. Right. So you can be, you know, being an awesome person. I like this example. So you're hanging out with your friend and your friend's like, hey, last week, you know, you were kind of a jerk. And you're like, what are you talking about? We had lunch. I picked up the tab. I bought you a coffee. We laughed. We had a good time. And they're like, well, yeah, you had a good time, but you said blah, 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 and really hurt my feelings. So the question is, were you a jerk or not? Well, who gets to decide? They do.
They do.
They do. So it doesn't matter if you think you're being awesome. Right. This is kind of like Paul. Right. Paul's being funny because he's enjoying it. And he, you know, he's doing that for himself. The question is, where do you leave the audience?
Right.
Awesome, Sam.
Yeah. Thanks.
Bravo. Bravo. I'm going to say we have time for one more because you guys are doing awesome and keeping them short. Anybody else have one they want to share?
I got one offbeat one, Joel.
Okay, who's that? That sounds
Jonathan.
Like Ed. Oh, Jonathan. Hi, Jonathan.
How you doing? So I went through the questions, and then two people took me off of the questions and said to me, well, I just have a question. You know, you're always, you know, redoing things. You're always like, you got a new system. You're going to do the last system didn't work. You got a new system. So they started going off into other areas where they thought that they could comment on, like, that related to this, and they also talked to me about why I go and hire unqualified people to just get burned later. So these two things came in from
wow.
two of the people that were not part of the four questions, but both of those people said that. And then what I was wondering is, did they just not understand that business is about blowing it up and starting it, you know, blowing your system up and making it better the next time? Or is it something
that
I need to...
I mean, not everybody follows the model of, you know, you're going to make mistakes, so make them quick and stomp on the gas pedal and go, go, go. Not everybody feels that way. They might have
right.
a different business philosophy of, you know, build slow, this business is going to be 30 years in the making. You know,
right.
they might have a different philosophy. The question I have is, who are you interviewing and why are these people, how is it significant to them that you had staff turnover?
They wanted to be
staff?
Helpful. Well, I had an admin that didn't work out. I had a buyer's agent that didn't work out and stuff. And they're like, why are you taking on these people? And then I had to explain to them, well, to the extent that if I went and hired someone at $80,000 a year, I still couldn't be sure that the person would work out and they would be stuck in their ways. So I ended up explaining to them something about how I prefer to do business versus...
Hang on a second. Part of this exercise is not to explain to them anything. The exercise is to say, okay, thank you. Is there anything else?
Well, I did that. And then afterward, because they weren't part of the questions, I took
gotcha.
The opportunity to discuss that out with them. Anyway, I didn't know if it related, but it popped up, and it popped up twice, and I thought it would be relevant.
So, again, it's relevant if it's relevant to you. And the point of this exercise is to get a different perspective. So if you interview 10 people and 9 of them say, why do you keep putting a stick in the spokes and screwing up your business? Why are you doing that? So you might not be doing that. What's interesting, though, is the impression upon the outside world is that you are destructive. So I'm not saying that you should do anything differently. I just think that it's insightful to know how I'm received and how I'm seen by others. right? So if the world says, man, why do you keep changing that? You're just not happy with anything. Every time you get a CRM, 6 months later, you're throwing it in the trash and getting another one. What, why is it impossible to make you happy? Now, that may not be true, yet I still think that there's something valid in there in getting the reflections from others on how we are being received by the world. And if everybody thinks that you're impossible to please, and if you're hard on employees, or if you're doing a lousy job hiring, I don't know if that's true. It's perspective. Yet it's a great place to start to look. Maybe there is some truth in there. I don't know. So, Jonathan, thank you for sharing that. Wow, good job, everybody. Good job. So I think that this is a very, very, very insightful exercise. And if you are, there's always somebody in the group. So if you got busy and this didn't get in your schedule and you didn't get any of these complete, my request is that you get some complete, a bare minimum of 5 or 10. Bare minimum. The goal is to see how are you showing up for the people around you. And a quick reminder, if one person has some problem that's an anomaly, then clearly you have something with that person to clean up. If 5 or 6 people say the same thing, it's you. Right? I'm looking for the common denominator. So, yeah, if you haven't done any of these, time block them. Put them in your schedule. Make sure that you get these done. This is really valid feedback. So last thing I'm going to say about this is, for me, my why. Why do I feel that this exercise is important? Because think about a time that you were at some place looking to buy something, and you were interacting with a salesperson. And the salesperson was doing something that didn't work for you. Maybe the whole time you were talking to the salesperson, they were like, yeah, hang on a second. And they're texting their girlfriend on their cell phone. Or maybe you were, you know, trying to buy a couch or a TV, and the person was making off-color jokes. Well, they were, you know, using swear words, for example, because that's what had them feel comfortable, yet that's what had you feel uncomfortable. So that salesperson was doing something for themselves, maybe dealing with their own angst and anxiety, maybe, yet it cost them the customer. So the goal in doing this exercise is to find out there's something that you're doing that's costing you the relationship. You know, it's like people with bad breath don't know they have bad breath. People that think that they're being funny are sometimes annoying. People that think that they're, you know, being this way are received that way. And I don't really know what that is for any of you. Yet the people that are around you the most will. So may this exercise be, you know, an enlightening growth experience for you, that you start to see the way that you are being reflected in the eyes of the world. If any of you have been through there's some training called the Landmark Forum. And if you've been through that training, they enroll people to this structure that you can have anything you want in the world when the rest of the world knows you as that. Right? So look at somebody like Gary Vee or Grant Cardone. Right? They're who they are because everybody knows them that way. Look at Tony Robbins. Like, the world knows Tony Robbins as this, you know, breakthrough guru. So now, because the whole world knows that he's that, he is that. So the question is, how does the world know you? Awesome. All right. We're going to change gears. So thanks,
Joel,
for doing that exercise.
I'm sorry, I had a question real quick on that.
Yes. Fire away.
This is Jonathan Riley in Chico.
Hey, Jonathan.
Hi. My question is, you know, to me it seemed like, first of all, awesome exercise. What it seemed like to me is, you know, the positive questions really help kind of break the barrier and get it flowing.
Yes.
and then help build confidence for them to be able to go ahead and share, you know, honestly, some
yes.
of the more negative ones. In terms of receiving the entire information, obviously it's looking for things that we can improve on, you know.
Correct.
But how much of the positives do you look at as well, and how do you, I guess, where do you take those, and what do you use those for, I guess, for, you know, the
honestly,
negatives and the obvious, it's like
I
where
think
I can work.
Me personally, I think there's pretty much nothing to learn from the positives.
Okay, yeah.
I mean, it makes me feel good, right? When people say, oh, my God, you're so smart, you're so this, you're okay, great, yeah, I appreciate that. Give me a warm hug. Okay, good. I didn't learn anything, right? I want constructive criticism. I want the places where people say, right here is not working. You can pat me on the back all you want. I'm just not going to learn anything from it.
Great. Okay, that was my take, too.
Great. Thanks for the question. All right, so now we're going to shift gears a little bit. We're going to talk a little bit about values, and then we're going to get an awesome value exercise. So consider that our values are the filters through which we make our decisions. So, for example, I have a friend that is this really staunch kind of patriotic character that doesn't want to buy anything if it wasn't made in the USA. Right? So that's a value. So if it says made in China, made in Taiwan, nope, don't want that one. So he's got this value that this is important to him for some reason. So our values determine our priorities, and deep down, they're really the measures that we use to tell if our lives are turning out the way we want. And values are the belief systems that we use to determine if our behaviors are right or wrong. So right, what do you mean right or wrong? Right or wrong compared to who? Exactly. Compared to our values. So consider a few of these questions. If you don't have the handout, I'll read you the questions. From where do we get our values and our value systems? Where do those come from? Where did you get your values? Is it okay to use the F word? I don't know. Depends on your values. Right? Those are different for everybody. There's no right and wrong. These are just various value systems. So where did you get your values? Well, you were born into your values. Right? You were born and they gave you a name and a religion and a belief doctrine, and you spend the rest of your life thinking that's right. Is it? I don't know, every religion in the world thinks their God's the right God and everybody else's God the wrong God. Which one's right? I don't know. Mine's right. Ask any third grader on planet Earth what's the best country in the world, and they all say, well, my country. This country's the best country in the world. Well, which football team's the best? My football team's the best. Right? Those are value judgments. So the real question is, which of your values are serving you? And which ones are getting in your way? I don't know. Only you can answer that question. Now, here's the interesting one. How do you know? How do you know if your value system, if any specific value, is healthy or if it's skewed and twisted? How do you know? One of my favorite examples is there was a time about 150 BC, in the heyday of the Roman Colosseum, where, you know, people fought to the death. And they, you know, people got mauled by lions, and they had gladiators killing each other. And there was a time that they, you know, literally fed Christians to the lions. Probably not just Christians, but lots of people got fed to the lions. So imagine a father taking his young children there for the first time. And for the children, like, whoa, this is the Colosseum. This is the big show. We get to see the whole thing. Holy smokes, here we are. And they're watching all the action and the lions and the tigers and the crowds and the cheering. And, oh, my God, this is amazing. And at the end, the kids go, Dad, holy smokes, this was unbelievable. Can we come do this again? Can we come next week to watch the Christians get fed to the lions? So the question is, Are these psychopaths, these children? Are these juvenile schizophrenics? What's the issue? No, these are normal children raised inside a skewed value system. So it's not right or wrong, good or bad. It's just the values are skewed, and these evolve over time. So the question is, if you knew your client's values, wouldn't it be so much easier to help them? I mean, wouldn't that just kick the doors open if you knew the values upon which your client was making decisions? Huge. So all people make their decisions based on some sort of value system. And as we become better and better at determining the client's values, the easier it is for us to help generate a winning solution for them. So here's how we do that. We're going to ask the client the criteria questions. And in your handout, it says determine the client's core values. These are also known as the criteria questions. And there's three very simple questions. So question number one is, what's important about? Say, for example, your client says, yeah, we need a bigger house. We want to move out of this house, and we need 5 bedrooms. Great. So now I know that the subject is 5 bedrooms, bigger house and or 5 bedrooms. So I'm going to say, great, happy to help. And I'm curious, what's important to you about having a 5-bedroom house? And the client says whatever they say. Well, you know, we need a master bedroom, and I need an office, and you know, we have 2 kids, and we're pregnant with twins. We think that it's important that each child has their own bedroom, because my wife's a child psychologist, and kids need a room that they can call their own. They need their own space. They need their own den. It helps them develop. Blah blah blah. That's a big deal. Like, now I know what's important to them. So when I say, and what would having 5 bedrooms do for you? They say, wow, it would let each kid have their own space to grow up and develop. And it would help them develop healthy psychological boundaries, to have their own place, their own space. Great. So now I take their answer from that one and I roll it into the question number three. So I'm curious, ultimately, what would it mean for you if you were able to provide this and that your children grow up to be healthy, well-adjusted, you know, extraordinary people? What would that mean for you if you're able to do that? And they would say whatever they say. Don't be surprised if you get an emotional response on number three. They might say, well, that would mean that my life is complete. I did my job of bringing these people into the world. So whatever the core issue is, I want to run their core issue through their core object through these three questions. You know, we want to buy some rental property. Great. Question number one, what's important to you about having some rental property? They say, well, you know, we've decided it's smart to, you know, get our money working for us. You know, we want to let the money work harder instead of us. We'd like to build some passive income. Great. Now I know why they want rental property. Question number two, I'm curious, what would having some passive income do for you? And you say, well, it would be, you know, the first step in us taking charge of our retirement. It would be moving towards, you know, it would be the first step in building some real wealth. It would be the step that would help us, you know, not be tied to our jobs, so we'd have some freedom in the world. The goal is to, you know, start, you know, buy, what if we could just buy one a year? Right now I know what's driving we want rental property, because. Now, question number three, again, so ultimately, what would it mean for you if we start this collection of rental property and you start building a string of passive cash flow? What would that mean for you? Oh my God, that would mean that someday we can get out of the rat race. It means we're no longer subject to the whims of our employers. Ultimately, it'd be great if, you know, if I got fired, who cares? We have all this real estate income coming in. Right now, I know not just what's important about that, not just what that would do for them, but ultimately what would that mean? What's the significance behind this? These are the values from which these people are making this decision. So two things happen when we take people through this, these three questions. Thing number one is you get to see, you get the behind the scenes view on what's really driving this client. Now you understand them better than you ever would have before had you not asked. Thing number two is because you asked these questions, it's very possible that this is the first time the client has verbalized this position to anybody. This is the first time that we've really held their feet to the fire and said, well, what's in this for you? What's this going to do for you? And now because you're asking these questions, now in your presence, their ultimate goals and dreams and significance of their movements are now, you know, being verbalized, are now being put on the table, probably for the first time. So now you get to be the person who, you know, people's goals and dreams become solidified in the conversations with you. Do you see how this is a completely different realm than, well, let me tell you, I can sell it. I can get you one. You want a blue one, a green one, a red one? You want to sign it today? Let me show you why I'm good. You should use me. That's salesperson-centric versus this model, which is customer-centric. So the more that we can make this conversation customer-centric, the more open and sharing and vulnerable the client will be with you. And you'll see in a few weeks when we get there, the fewer objections you will get. Consider, most of the objections that you're getting in the sales process are coming to you because the way in which you're attempting to sell the client feels like, to the client, feels like you're in it for you. So it's only natural that the client would say, well, how many of these have you sold before? And, you know, have you sold one like this before? Like, tell you, like what? Right? So they're starting to protect themselves a little bit because they're clear that you're trying to convince them instead of clear that you're working to help and serve them. All right, I've been talking way too much. Questions, comments? What do you think about this process? Any thoughts, any feedback, anything?
Yeah, this is Paul. I think that's awesome. I mean, yeah, it's like you're peeling the onion back and you're opening up the door. I'll give you an example. Let's say, for instance, I'm calling expires and the lady's going to go, well, I've had 1,500 calls or whatever. And I say, you know, ma'am, those 1,500 calls, you know who they are? Those are people that were hired by a realtor and they get paid by the hour. But you know what? I'm the realtor. I'm here because I care and I want to ask you some questions. How can I help you? I mean, that would be a good
example. I think just the fact that you're coming from how can I help you is a great step in the right direction. Great step.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That alone separates you from the bulk of the competition.
Right.
Yeah. So
Sam in
Southern
California.
Hey, Sam.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
Oh, okay. I actually was thinking of you this morning and thinking about these specific questions in an accountability call that I had with a member of my team this morning. And I will tell you, I learned something really powerful this morning. She was texting and was going to be late and sent me a picture of her son bleeding. And
oh.
You know, I kind of, sometimes I'm heartless because I'm on agenda, you know, and I'm like, okay, well, is everything okay? And she said, oh, I'll call you in 10 minutes or whatever. And I had to make that, I love what you said in the last round about think the best of everybody, because when you don't, it comes across, right? So I
yeah.
was really just kind of like, okay, there's probably, I was going down the like, what didn't you prepare? How did you not manage your time? You know, I'm going in that kind of jerk mode.
You're blamed.
And yeah.
And didn't realize what had really happened yet.
Yeah, and I realized that. So I'm like, okay, we'll just remain open. And I was in a therapy session yesterday, and they were talking about, like, that symptoms cannot exist in tension, right? So just let it all go, and then you can be present, right? So it was my point is to your three core value questions. When we got on the phone, I said whatever I said, and I asked some questions, and she goes, well, whenever I see blood, I freak out. Well, I didn't understand that because I don't see why people would do that. But I said, oh, what happens for you when you see blood? I was trying to think of these,
nice.
And I said, what's important about that for you? Not like, duh, when you see blood, there might be a problem. But I thought, is there something specific that causes you to be troubled?
Sure.
And she said, yeah, and this was the really poignant part. Her son, I knew this before, her son has a really rare form of genetic cancer. And so she said, whenever I see blood, I instantly think brain tumor. And blood coming from, he was his nose was bleeding. And she said, I know everybody else might think it's no big deal, but whenever I see blood, I think there might be a symptom happening with my son because this disease shows itself in specific ways. And I was really humbled by that because I thought, that's why Joel is teaching all of us to care about people's core values, because I was irritated that she saw, like, a little bit of blood. Every kid, like, picks their nose or does whatever. That's what I was thinking. And she said,
well,
oh, yeah.
Well, a bloody nose from a regular kid and a bloody nose
right.
from her kid got this weird – is a completely different bloody nose.
Right. And so it reinforced for me why it's so important to say, what's important about that for you? Like, why is that important to you? And I want to thank you because it was a good – moment in my personal development and in my relationship with her. And it was a good teaching moment because we've been working on rapport. She has been trying to work on rapport. And I said, hey, how do you feel about me now that I know that about you and blood and your son? And she's like, I feel so great that you, it's like, you know me more now. So
and
you
asked. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you're in my head, Joel. You're right in there.
Awesome. Well, just so everybody else knows, this is not Sam's first time training with me. She's been here a time or two. So thanks, Sam. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
I want to say one last thing about that is, it's my belief, it's my knowing that the thing that will facilitate your sales to grow and expand and evolve, I believe faster than anything else, is your ability to listen to the client. The number one, I'm going to say a lot of times, you might want to write it down, the number one complaint against salespeople across all industries is the salesperson didn't listen. And so being customer-centric, focusing on good questions, forces you to listen to the answers. And even these questions, what's important about ABC? And they go, well, this is important. And you go, oh, really? And what would having that do for you? You had to listen to the answer in order to ask the next question. So not only is this a tool that you're getting connected to your client and you're learning their values, and the more I learn their values, the more I can align with their needs and help and serve them, this exercise also demonstrates to the client that you care, that you're listening enough to ask deep questions, that you're hearing the answers. The simple fact that you're saying, oh, and what would it mean for you to have a bedroom for each one of your children? You're repeating it back. You're demonstrating that you're listening, you're hearing, you're on their side. This is key. Most salespeople don't do that. They just go, 5-bedroom house. Okay, we got a lot of those. What else? Right? That's a person who's hunting for a sale rather than trying to make a difference. Remember, when we focus on solving their problems, you'll never run out of sales. When you focus on how do I get another sale, you're going to work your butt off to get those sales. When you become known as the person who, you know, I'll listen, I'll figure it out, we'll get to the bottom of it, we'll come up with a win-win solution that makes your life work. When you become known as the person who can have their dreams manifest during the conversation and you set up a win-win solution that makes them happy, you'll never run out of sales or clients.
Hey, Joel.
Yes.
Quick question. When you do step one, and I've done this, you know, in your last class, I've been doing it throughout the year. A lot of times I ask so what's important about selling this house to you? And I get a very cynical response a lot of times. Like, I want to sell the house. What do you mean, what's important about it? I want to sell it.
Okay, so then it happens sometimes that I need to ask that question a few times. And I might say, yeah, I'm clear that you want to sell it. That's why you're talking to me. I'm curious. Are you selling it for the money? Are you selling it for a new job? Are you, you know, like, I'm curious. What's inspiring this sale for you? Right? I might need to ask that question a couple of times. I might need to ask it in a different way.
And I've asked you this before, and I've, you know, sometimes when you're not in rapport or not enough in rapport and you're trying to get into rapport,
yeah,
you know, they throw back the, well, that's none of your business. So the issue is,
so that,
you know, should
second,
we start
on,
asking this? Okay.
Mm-hmm. So hang on a second. For everybody else, pay attention. When you're getting that kind of a response, well, that's a personal question. It's none of your business how much I owe on this house. We're going to spend a lot of time talking about how to manage these issues. However, that's a sign that you didn't get in rapport first. When you're in rapport, they don't say that stuff. They go, yeah, I owe $375. When you're in rapport, they're clear that you're on their side, and they have no resistance to answering these questions. If you're getting that kind of a response, you skipped a step somewhere. You went too fast. You were pushing for questions before you got connected first. All right, sorry for interrupting. That was a really, really good point. I wanted everybody to get that.
That's all I was saying was that.
Okay.
You know, I thought I was in rapport, and I guess I wasn't. And then what do you do? Do you just say, "Tell me more about that"? Can you tell me? You know, can you tell me more? What do you say?
Yeah. So if that's the case, how do you handle that? Is really get in rapport as quick as you can, right? Reconnect to mirroring and matching them, and ask the question a little more gently. So if that's the case, if they say, well, it's none of your damn business how much I owe on this house, right? We just need you to sell it. I might say, well, I totally get that it's really, truly none of my business how much you owe, and please don't take this personally. I just want to make sure, you know, I'm not trying to step on your toes. I just want to make sure that you have adequate margins. I need to make sure that there's not a second loan. I want to make sure that you owe less than it's worth because it's a different process. I'm just doing my best to solve this problem for you. So it looks like the house is worth about $500. Do you owe less than $500 or more than $500? Right? I might water it down and make it a little more obvious. Something. I'm going to, if I get resistance like that, I want to focus, number one, get in rapport. What does that sound like? I don't know. Mirror and match them. If they sound upset, I'm going to say, well, I totally get that you're upset. I didn't mean to hurt your feelings. And I just need to know, do you owe less than $500? Okay, is there only one loan on the property? I want to make sure that, you know, those loans have to be paid off before you get proceeds. One loan? I'm just going to keep asking in rapport and maybe a little nicer. Great question. Great question. All right, we're going to do one more process today. What time is it? Yeah, we're going to do another process. And this one's not as critical. And this one works really well when you are already in rapport. So the first one that we just did, the criteria questions, they find out somebody's core value. The next one that we're going to do right now is I want to get some clues on their decision-making process. So this is not structured. These are not in order. This is not in concrete, none of that. This is, I just want to know how this person makes decisions. Because the way somebody makes decisions is usually the way they make decisions on all things. So I want to ask, once I'm in rapport, I want to come from curiosity, and I want to ask a handful of these questions, whatever I feel is appropriate and I can get away with. So these questions are things like, well, how will you know when you find the right house? How will you know when you, well, we're going to interview five realtors. Great. I got it. I'm curious, how will you know when you find the right one? How are you going to pick between the five? Now, there's a lot, I mean, that sounds like a silly question, yet there's a lot of ways they could respond. They could say, well, we're going to, you know, interview five, and, you know, we're going to create a spreadsheet and look at how many homes they've sold and how many homes they expired, and look at their list to sales price ratio, and look at their days on the market, and I'm going to write a complex algorithm to find out where, who has our best, right? Maybe you're hiring an engineer accountant. And maybe they could say, well, I'm just going to meet five and trust my gut and see which one vibes with me the best. Two completely different answers. And so based on their answer, I'm going to explore a little more. So how will you know if this agent's truly just really vibing with you, or if they're just doing that to win your affection? How are, you know, how do you judge that? Or if they say, well, we're going to look at the stats and look at the list of sales price ratio, and we're going to review their comps and blah, 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 I'm going to say, okay, so is that something that you're just going to build a spreadsheet and make a decision by 5 o'clock? Well, no, I'm going to read their stats and read this and call the Department of Realtors. And okay, and is that something that you're going to do just once or twice? How are you going to do that? So the reason I want to know their decision-making process, and it doesn't even have to be about realtors. I like to use something else. I think I get better results if I ask about something different. Me, I'm a car guy, so I like to say, hey, I see you have a new Mercedes in the garage. That's a great car, the E500. That's a spectacular car. I'm curious, how did you happen to pick that car? And whatever they say, right? Well, we test drove 3 or 4. That one had good consumer reports, and you know they have a stellar reputation. And the V6 was a little sluggish, but the V8 was unbelievable, and oh my God, it felt so good to drive it, I had to have it. Or they might say, oh my God, it was the most beautiful shade of blue. I saw it on the lot. I drove by it 2 or 3 times. I kept seeing the shade of blue. It just looked like the color of heaven, and I just went in and bought it. Those are two very different clients. How is this important? How's this helpful for us? Well, the way they bought that car, the way they buy a stock, the way they chose the last house, it's the way they're going to choose the next realtor too. And if they go on gut, then I want to speak to their gut. If they go on, you know, comps and numbers and list of sales price ratios and statistics, then I'm going to give them the stuff to read. Oh, you want blah, 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 blah. Okay, great. I'll bring those to you. Would you like paper copies or digital copies? So none of these questions, unlike the criteria questions, which are what's important about that, what will that do for you, what will that mean for you, those three in that order every time. This is random. Get a few of these in. How many times are you going to interview each person? How many houses did you look at before you chose this one? How many times did you look at this house before you wrote an offer? How many interviews did you do before you chose the last agent? Is there anybody else that you spoke to about making this decision? People say, well, my dad's a real estate broker and he lives in Iowa. And so, you know, I'm definitely going to call him and tell him what's going on and help him, you know, get his advice. If that's the case, I'm going to say, fantastic, you got a realtor in the family. Great, can we call him right now? Because that's awesome that you have him in your corner. Let's connect. So the more that we know about how they make buying decisions, the more we can shape the presentation to match their buying decisions. If they say, well, I read everything. I want to read this and read that and call this person and call that person. I want to read all this. Great. So how long do you normally do that? Well, I don't know. I'm not in a big hurry. I might be 6 months before I put this house in the market. If that's the case, I'm not going to push them to sign a contract today if they're somebody who's going to read for 6 months, because it's just going to tick them off. If that's the case, I'm going to start supplying them with whatever it is they need to read. And every time I sell a home, hey, look, I sold another one, overpriced. Check this one out. Sold another one. Check this one out. Right? That's somebody who makes decisions slowly, then start feeding them information. All right, there's a few examples in your handout, assuming you got it, that are how did you decide on the last car you purchased? Oh, yeah, they're both car. So the first one is, I read this, I read that, I test drove, I read the reviews, I talked to my mechanic, I talked to my insurance broker, I read this stat, I read that stat, I looked at the survival rate in accidents, this is what I did. And then I started shopping for price, I went online, and I did comparison contrasting, I found the cheapest dealership is in, you know, Yuba County, and it might be a huge process for them. And then the other guy says, oh my God, it's the most beautiful color. My grandmother passed away, left me some money, so I went and bought a car that afternoon. Oh, did you see the shade of blue? It's amazing. Right? These are two very, very different clients. And so as we learn more and more about the client, it's easier and easier to present in the client's style. The person who makes a quick decision based on their gut, you bury them in paperwork, and they're not going to read any of that stuff. They're going to go, I don't have time for all that crap. This other guy just said, hey, buddy, what's going on? I'll help you. Okay, good, let's sign. Right? I want to be not only in rapport with the person, yet in rapport with their process, how they make decisions, how they're comfortable moving forward. All right, we just got a few minutes left. Questions, comments, ahas, scenarios, role plays, upsets, anything.
Austin. Oh, hey, it's Toronto and Austin.
Hey, Toronto, what's up, man? Long time
hey.
No speak.
Yeah. Hey,
and welcome back.
I'm really, thank you. This is obviously my first time in Troop and Sales, but I've taken several of your classes before. I'm really liking the class, so thanks for putting it on.
Yeah, man. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, I have a couple of objections really that keep coming up for me that I kind of wanted to just bring up and see, get your opinion on.
Sure.
I don't know how it is in other markets, but in Austin, where I am, the home of Keller Williams, there are quite a few agents that are following this ISA model, which has a lot of, you know, people that really aren't trained in real estate. They're not going out taking listings that, you know, they're calling people of various skill sets and backgrounds are calling in the marketplace.
For those of you that don't know, ISA means inside sales agent. Basically, it's a real estate agent who hires a telemarketer, basically, hires somebody to set appointments for them. They're not realtors. They're not brokers. A lot of times they're not licensed. Their appointment.
Right.
Centers. Yeah. Okay. Go ahead.
Yes. And so just doing this now, I'm going into my eighth year. I've just noticed since the ISA model has gained in popularity, there's just been extreme resistance. Like, I mean, there's always been resistance to realtors and telemarketers calling, but these days,
sure.
I mean, when Gary Keller is even having to get on stage and say, hey, we're going to have to, you know, really look at what we're promoting here as far as cold calling. It's just been a shift in how we've been able to really reach people, I think, in the market via this telemarketing. And so I've noticed that there's just a lot of resistance for people just even talking to me, period, because they're getting bombarded with
so what are those people saying, and how does the resistance manifest?
So they're saying, like, well, I'll take an offer if you have one, but I'm not going to list it. So that's one of the main things that they say.
Gotcha.
Or they may say, if you have a serious buyer, you can contact my listing agent. But other than that, so those are the main two ones that I'm getting shut down on and people hanging up.
Okay,
on
well, the second one, if you have a serious buyer, contact my listing agent. If they're under contract with a listing agent, you shouldn't be calling them in the first place.
No, they're not. They're not. They're just saying that. These are expired, but they're saying because they don't want to talk to me.
So step one in getting this sort of pushback is agree with them. Agree with them.
Right.
Right, and consider what's your competition doing. Hey, if you have a serious buyer, then bring me an offer. Right, so I would agree with them and say, well, I don't know if I have a serious buyer yet. I haven't seen the house. And wow, it sounds like people are BSing you, pretending they have a buyer. Is that happening?
Mm.
I just want to take
That's
their
good,
side.
Joel.
I just want to take their side, because consider who else is calling them. It's a bunch of people saying, hey, you know, sell it with me and I'll get you more money. Let me show you how great I am, right? And
exactly
they're upset. They're not upset at you. They're upset at the last 10 people who called and tried to manipulate them.
Right.
So your job is to get in rapport. And get in rapport, in addition to mirroring and matching their tone and all that, is take their side. If they're ticked off, trust me, they're ticked off for some reason.
So how do I take their side when if someone says, I'll take an offer, but I'm not going to list it with you, you realtor, right? They're not saying, I don't want to sell my house. They're just saying, hey, I'm getting bombarded with all these realtors calling me saying the same thing, and I'm annoyed, so I don't want to talk to you. So how do I ask a question and get back in rapport after someone says that?
I totally get that you're open to an offer. And it sounds like a bunch of realtors have been blowing up your phone and giving you some grief. Have they been rude to you? Notice, have they been rude to you? I want to take their side. My goal here is not to take that listing. My goal here is to make a connection.
Okay.
Taking
the
listing might come down the road.
Right. So I've been good for the most part in that, you know, in what you just did. But then what happens is I start getting rapport and start asking them questions, and later in the call, they get upset with me because they're like, oh, well, eventually when I do go to close them for the listing, they're like, well, wait a minute. Now you're just sounding just like the people that I just told you were pissing me off. You're just asking me for the listing too. So how do I get around
so
that?
Don't ask them for the listing. Don't ask them for the listing. Say, well, it sounds like you needed to sell that house. You were listed for 6 months and it didn't work. Do you have any idea why it didn't work? I mean, I'm looking at the pictures. House looks great. Why do you think it didn't sell? Huh? Wow, I don't know either. Well, I'm not at this stage. I'm in no position. This is the separates you from everybody else. At this stage, I'm in no position to promise you anything.
Mm.
Not seeing the house. Maybe it looks great in pictures, but it smells like cat pee. I have no idea. I can't promise you anything. What I'm willing to do, if you're open, is I'm willing to come take a look at the house. And maybe we can figure out together why it didn't sell. And if you're interested and motivated to sell, and we can figure out why it didn't sell, maybe we can come up with a solution that will help get you moved. And maybe not. I don't know yet. Are you open to meet with me to see if we can figure it out? So I'm not pushing for a listing. I'm offering a perspective on maybe we can figure out what happened. Maybe we can solve this problem.
Okay, I'll give that a shot. I've just
found
that whereas a few years ago it was much easier for me to close and get the sale and use some really cool skills, there's a lot of resistance now just because there's so many people calling
right.
and they're getting so annoyed, you know, so that helps though. I appreciate it.
That's true also, really true in Southern California and Austin, right? These markets are blowing up. People are hiring a bunch of ISAs. Especially whenever that one silly program is in town, you know, they have an expired day and a FSBO day. And, you know, if there's one expired, you know, they get 85 calls in one day. And by the end of the day, they are ticked off.
Yes. And I don't blame them.
So that's the key right there. I don't blame them. Of course they're ticked off. So if your friend was ticked off, you would just take their side. And so realize these people are ticked off for a reason. And as you befriend them, problem.
Okay.
Awesome. Awesome. All right.
Awesome.
I see
Thank
by
you.
My clock we're a few minutes. You're welcome. I see we're a few minutes over time. We're 12:02 on my clock. Sorry about that. We are jumping in with – so practice these this week. Take everybody through the criteria questions, your kids, your friends, your clients, your coworkers, your employees, everybody, your parents, everybody.
What's going on?
For practice. And then next week, we're jumping into the beginning of our technique. So this is the first 2 weeks are some setup. Next week, we start some technique. So that's it. Have an awesome week. I will talk to you guys all next week.
Awesome.
Thanks, everybody. See you next week. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Joel.
Yep, you're very welcome. Go get them. Remember, it's your job to go make a difference in the world. Find people. Find out what they need. Go help them.